It's a pleasure to be here and discuss with you some of the mineralogical family history and soil taxonomy. And it's the history is appropriate too, because that's about what I am. Or just, but we still sort of keep up with it somewhat on the edges. I don't have to go back too far in years to get to the beginning of these soil mineralogical family classes. They were not considered as any kind of diagnostic features until after 1960, when the seventh approximation was published. See, in fact, the clay mineral concept really was not verified until somewhere in the 1920s, when the analytical equipment became available to actually confirm this this theory of the clay mineral concept. And also, soil mineralogy data was not adequate to form classes until sometimes after World War II. Also, in addition to that, the early soil classifications the emphasis was on broad environmental features from which classes were formed, and not something as specific as mineralogy. They had broader features such as vegetation, climate, and geology. And there was uncertainty also about the correlation between mineralogy and soil properties. That data was lacking. A few words on the rationale for the formation of the classes in soil taxonomy. Now, Dr. Smith followed a hard line on this rationale. And if you came up with an idea, you needed to look at that and have some answers for those questions. But it doesn't mean that he didn't include family classes in the seven, that they weren't being looked at and studied. But there wasn't enough available data, he didn't feel, to form classes. And a lot of it was just something someone might want and didn't have that much taxonomic weight. In order to address some of this, in the interviews, the Guy Smith interviews, he said that he relied very heavily on data and expertise on mineralogy from the soil survey laboratories and their staff. These were the labs in Beltsville, Lincoln, and Riverside. In order to form classes, some of the first things addressed were defining the control zone and the particular soil fraction that was going to be analyzed. And these had to be answered before we could move forward in coming up with class limits. In fact, say at the start of this process, for mineralogy, there was very strong support for whole soil mineralogy. And this I like to call the beginning. These were the 13 classes we started the activity. And right from the start, many of the purists didn't like some things about them. One thing was we didn't like montmorillonitic. And it fell on deaf ears for a long time. And this was some of Dr. Smith's hard line. More people would understand montmorillonitic than they would smectitic. So he wanted to keep it. A lot of us didn't like mixed either. In either case, usually it told us what it wasn't. And amorphous, we didn't know what it was, so how could we quantitate it? But it stayed with us for a while. When this came out, for those of us that were out in the field trying to put lines, soil lines on maps, and naming map unit, we didn't get too excited about mineralogy classes. We were much more concerned with what came out in the seventh approximation with something like the soil pedon. How big was it? Can I jump across it? And so we had to come up with some answers for those. They were real for us. And then some more questions came up. Were that the changing of names, and this was particularly series names, you had to put a name on it, but and say our colleagues too would come up to us and they'd say, wait a minute, this soil at this experiment station has been Norfolk. Fact is, this station was put here because that was Norfolk. And now you say it's Dothan. The characteristics different, and well, didn't have much of an answer for that, but I'd usually say that no, it just means we're a little smarter right now. And we're taking a much better look and considering the soil properties themselves instead of concentrating so much on these broad environmental features. In 1967, there was a supplement to the seventh approximation. And now in this, the control section was given as 75 centimeters, R to a contact. And there were some additional classes introduced, such as ferritic, gypsitic, glauconitic, gypsic, cindry, and two subclasses, sulfurous and calcareous. However, the mixed classes were still retained. There was strong support for the mixed in terms of defining subclasses of mixed, such as mixed dash or subordinate MT, montmorillonitic, or mixed kaolinitic. And that was receiving support. But The proposal for that, those subclasses were that the precision and the limits for concentration of these minerals were such that we didn't have that kind of data. And you couldn't get that through either if you didn't have that. And we didn't have that much quantitative data available to us in mineralogy, for mineralogy. We were semi-quantitative at best, with quantities given as what, 1 through 5. And we still do that to some extent. So if you wanted a sub there with that, if it had from 20 to 30% montmorillonite, well, that may be hard to get that kind of data. So that didn't go very far. Now, the I'm going to back up one on the 1962 issuance of mineralogy family classes, and that never was a major publication that circulated all around the world. That was a soils memo from Billy Ligon to soil scientists in the U.S. And so it took a while for it to catch on, since it didn't come out as a refereed publication. Now the supplement did. Right now, I know I can't find any copies of the supplement. But there were some around. In 1970, there were 20 mineralogical classes that were defined in a mineralogical key. And there was the addition of chloritic and feldspathic. And I couldn't find out whether those first 13 were as a key or not. I don't think so. And several of the proposed classes were omitted, such as fine carbonatic and sulfurous calcareous. The ashy and cindery were dropped later in 1975. Now we go through a period from 1970 to 1972. And there were no major changes in the mineralogical family classes until 1992. That was when a separate mineralogical family table was proposed and accepted for oxisols. And that was introduced as a result of the work of an international committee on oxisols. It would be ICOMOX. And that was chaired by Stan Buell. Now, this was a significant change, as it was followed then later with the proposals by ICOMLAC, the International Committee on Low Activity Clays, that was chaired by Frank Moorman. Because it was then since both were based on clay activity, well, it was logical that they could both go and use that table. So you'd follow this key and you'd get to this point at the whether it was going to be oxisols or whether it was candy, and that's when you would go to that table to follow the mineralogical classes. Now, in 1975, When Salt Taxonomy was published, it included refinements in several aspects of the family category, such as the intent of the family category was given, and it was to group soils with similar physical and chemical properties which respond similarly to use and management, and that was just an intent of the category, not a definition of the category, and that was somewhat at odds with the rest of the categories. All the rest of the categories were defined and not just given as an intent. And now, later, ICOMFAM, the International Committee on Family Criteria, did address that. And I've listed several of the ICOM groups that were around. There was the andesols and the wet soils, and spodosols, verdosols, and aridosols. We had a lot of the ICOM group. I'll just tell you how these came about. I don't need that one. Now, ICOMFAM that addressed the family classes, but we concentrated a lot on mineralogy. Now, the international committees were formed a lot with the assistance of Soil Management Support Services. That was a NRCS kind of a group. And this Soil Management Support Services was headed by Nihari S. Warren. And they would find a chairman for this international committee and come up with a list of names, people that thought that might be interested in that particular area, say like in mineralogical families or some of the other family aspects. And then we sent letters to those people giving the charge of it for that committee, asking them if they wanted to, would be interested in participating on it. And if they said yes, okay, then when some more information or the first round of information would be gathered and some proposals made, the chairman would send out a circular letter, what he called a circular letter, to all these committee members. And the way you stayed on the committee was to respond to it. And if you didn't respond, well, the next time you didn't get a circular letter. And we usually kept a lot of that first group. And then along the way, people would write and want to get on the committee. And again, you got on it by getting in your name, then you'd get a circular letter and you responded. Now we, ICOM Ox, Stan sent out 17 circular letters during the life of that committee. ICOM LAC, Frank Mormon on low activity clays, circulated 20 letters, and in ICOM FAM was also 20 letters circulated in those 10 years. So maybe we should have called that, the final reports on those should have been about the 20th approximation, follow along with the way the 7th approximation was named. ICOMFAM addressed all family classes. And a lot of effort in the mineralogical classes, and then there was some support for changing the nomenclature somewhat instead of using single mineral names to name a class, because it'd be a very unusual soil to have just one mineral, a proposal was to name mineral assemblages. And in the Southeast, we developed a soil mineral map where we used mineral assemblage names as opposed to single mineral classes, and we presented that here, not here, but at the meetings. But they didn't create any holidays, and there was no celebrations about it. It really didn't go very far. Ikamfam spent a lot of time working with cation exchange activity, and we started out with that primarily to help with the mixed classes. And this is the way we do it now, but not the way we intended. We actually, the original intent was to use cation exchange activity actually to come up for naming those mixed classes. But now it just kicks in when you have a mixed family. We addressed particle size classes, and one that was probably the most significant that carried was the use of the fine clay name for all orders, and there would maybe some exception. We propose that there be one fixed control section for all soils. One thing that would have made it a lot easier for us trying to teach it. But there were other reasons also. And the reason it wasn't accepted was that it would have split a lot of series, which some regions didn't want to split. You can imagine what it would have done to the gross arenics. We proposed a 1 meter control section. So it didn't, it wasn't accepted, but it was out there. We deleted chloritic from soil taxonomy. The reason, because I don't think there was a chloritic soil correlated up until that time, so there was no need for it. We mentioned the clay activity, and we're having some problems with oxidic. So introduced a paracesquic instead of oxidic and recommended a lower limit for that class. And finally, officially changed montmorillonitic to smectitic. And I really wanted smectic. I stammer and stutter sometimes when I speak, and I had some problems with titic. So I was thinking that I would just go with smectic. And then these are some of the other recommendations that went in the final report. The paramicaceous, I want to point out that one was based on a lot of data that Lucian Selesnyan and his students did in that particular area. And we did modify haloacidic, kaolinitic, and so forth just by getting a lower limit for them and also having such words as at least 50% smectite plus vermiculite, but more smectite, and so forth. So we did get those words in there. And the recommendations that were accepted then were published in the second edition. So now in the 10th edition of the Keys, we end up with 32 mineralogical family classes, and we got to that from 13. And the work goes on. So history isn't going to stop here, I'm sure. So at the present time, there are individuals studying kaolinitic and mixed inoxazoles. The definition of jarosite, I think there's some need to modify the definition as is given in taxonomy. There is the GIPSIUS, I think it's called, a committee that's actively working now. And there are people interested in this isotic class that we, in ICOFEM, presented. Isotic dealt just heavily, we wanted with andesols. And the amorphous materials going with andesols. And if you follow the Keys rigidly, you'll end up getting some spodosols out of Florida into it and some other salts. So I call that isotic jump the fence. And so there's going to have to be some correction. In conclusion, a little bit on future needs. As far as improved methods, and we see that going on as we had our first two speaker talk, they gave us a lot on improving methods. First one's proposed there was curved deconvolution that works well too. It's very seldom that you can work with just one nice single peak. Sometimes you do need to deconvolute that into two minerals. And there's some correlations that we don't know yet. We don't have enough correlations on the hydroxy interlayered minerals and just how they affect properties. And we look at the influence of mineralogy on use-dependent properties such as, as sustainable potassium, magnesium, and calcium. And mineralogy and the role of mineralogy would play in sustaining physical properties of soils, such as hydrology, structure, air. I would like to thank you for listening to some of this history and talking about it, and I didn't want it to sound like, there's not much to learn anymore. Oh, we did it then. So I think it just shows you that there's a lot left to do. Thank you.